Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of the ReWrap Podcast, where we talk about all things photo, video, mobile, and the creative lifestyle. In the absence of my normal partner Caraminder this week, I'm being joined by one of my best friends and someone I respect greatly, architectural photographer.
Don't know why.
architectural photographer Mike Kelly. Thanks for joining me, Mike.
You're very welcome.
So Mike is new to this podcast, so he might take a little bit of time to warm up, but I know he's got many opinions that I enjoy hearing, which is why I invited him. So what we're going to start with this week is a couple of news items that I wanted to go over, some that I think deserved a little bit more talk than they may have gotten during the week. The first of which is yesterday I woke up bright and early to Amazon stating that they're going to allow unlimited cloud storage on their servers for $60 a year. I think it was like $12 a year gets you unlimited for photos, which is incredibly unheard of. That's like dirt cheap.
Well, hold on. There's a caveat. Okay. Have you seen their new terms of use?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. So there's like a section like 1 point something or other, right?
Yeah, it says it cannot be used for running a professional photography business. They literally say in italics, no professional photographers or whatever. This is not a file delivery service. This is a personal, non-commercial storage solution.
How do you police that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure if they see someone sending 5 links a day of 2 gigabyte, worth of files, they'll be like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, so, I mean, like, you'd have to be delivering using it, but I don't see why you couldn't use it to just back up all your stuff for your pro business and just not share anything out of it.
Is that too, yeah. So like, it doesn't, I guess it's not a replacement for like Dropbox or...
Yeah, so when I first saw it, and a lot of the headlines out there were along the lines of Amazon goes for the throat of Box and Dropbox. Like, this is how they kill them. And when I first saw this, I thought the same thing, because everybody who pays attention in like the server industry knows that literally everyone, with no exception, is using an Amazon server to house everything, including the U.S. government, because it's like the safest and most redundant source to do that. So like Dropbox and Box are totally living on a Amazon server.
So I have the line item here that says non-commercial use only. I can read it to you if you want.
Yeah, please do.
It says, quote unquote, all plans are for your personal non-commercial use, which means that, for example, you may not use Cloud Drive to store, transfer, or distribute content of or on behalf of third parties, comma, to operate your own file storage and sharing application or service, or to operate a photography business or other commercial service, or to resell any part of the service. Also, all cloud services are dependent on network conditions, and we may impose limitations on uploads or downloads, sharing, number of enabled devices or IP addresses, or other restrictions.
So they could theoretically, if they see me uploading 95 terabytes of video files, decide that they're going to cap me.
Yes, correct.
Okay. So, I mean, on the surface, this sounded amazing. The more I look into it, the more I realize I probably will continue to not use this service. Like, I think as a Prime member, you get the free photos included, unlimited photos, and I have never used that. Maybe I think
it's cool. It's like an extra place to back up, Like, yeah. I'll probably throw some. I have Amazon Prime. I couldn't live without it. And I'll probably throw just like an extra copy of super important stuff on there just so I have like 7 backups of it now,
instead of 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know some people who use Amazon. Do you use Amazon Glacier? Which is like that hardcore backup?
I know. I use Amazon AWS for, I guess, maybe is that the same thing?
I don't know. I'm asking the right. Our friend Tam would know better than us. But I think AWS is like their web hosting server. I don't know if it's like where you can actually back up entire servers. Like your entire computer and everything you have, you could actually put online. I think Caraminder actually uses Amazon Glacier.
Yeah. I use AWS for like super important files that I'm working on that I'm paranoid about losing, even though I have 6 copies of them already. So,
yeah, I haven't gotten that paranoid yet, but it's only a matter of time, I imagine. So there's that. I don't know. I'm not particularly fond of the limitations that Amazon put on it. Like, how are you going to take down the competitors who are clearly using your servers if you're going to put that many limitations on the product? Also, sharing out of it is not easy. I actually looked at it, and you can't share full folders. You can only share individual files. I don't know. And there's no like collaborating, obviously, because what you just read basically states they don't plan to let you collaborate, and it clearly doesn't. So maybe in the future, but right now, I don't think it's really worth it.
I need Google Drive to come out with like a collaborative file storage thing. That would be great.
You want to bet it's being hosted on an Amazon server? All right. So the next thing, the second piece of news that I wanted to cover, this was particularly sad, and I was a little bit shocked by this. Everybody's favorite lighting guy passed away last week at the age of 78, Paul C. Buff. And I don't know if it's possible for you to be a even semi-professional photographer who understands lighting, who has never seen or touched a Paul C. Buff product.
Yeah. And I used Einsteins for a long time. And I think what he did for the industry was amazing. He really kept all the lighting manufacturers honest, so to say.
Yeah, I broke one of your Einsteins, actually.
I broke many of them. Don't worry.
And the White Lightnings, like we wouldn't have been able to do your Pan Am shoot.
Pan Am shoot, yeah.
Those White Lightnings.
No, I mean, and I think like his stuff is amazing. And he was a visionary in that sense. And he really shook up the industry. So I'm interested to see what will happen going forward to his company and the industry as a whole. I'm sure there's contingency plans laid out for all that, but
yeah, since I think he's been ill for the past 6 to 8 months, something like that, I recall reading that. And the last major thing I think he had his hand in was that Kawasaki Ninja colored version 2 of the Vagabond Mini. Did you see that? It was like bright blue.
Yeah, I saw that.
With some hideous green on it too.
Yeah, it was the ugliest thing I've ever seen, but.
And it was very, very characteristically Paul C. Buff. Like, yeah. That's his thing, man. When I was working at, I started out in the lighting industry. Mike knows this. I'm saying it for all you listeners. I worked for a company called Photoflex, and everybody at Photoflex just hated Paul C. Buff. And I think it's because Paul C. Buff had a product that clearly outclassed everyone else's for way
everybody
less.
At Photoflex seems really bitter. I wonder if they're listening to this.
Probably not listening. The company actually, I think they're looking to like clear out their assets. The owner, I think, is going to lose his house. That's how the company is just like really, really tanking right now. I feel really bad for them to a certain extent. I feel bad for the people that were good to me there. At any rate, we were just told these stories about how Paul C. Buff was just this megalomaniac who would always control every little aspect of his company, which sounds very Steve Jobsy. You can be a great business person and do this as long as you actually have legitimate business ideals. Like, I think where people say like this is a bad thing is if your company is really failing and yet you still fail to give up a little bit of control to help save the company.
You need to be the benevolent dictator.
Yes.
If you want things to get done.
And I think that's what Paul C. Buff was. And that made him a very polarizing figure, but at the same time, very, very necessary for the industry. I think that he did quite a lot for us, and it is a shame to see him go. And I agree with you. I'm curious to see where Paul C. Buff goes from here. Like, how do they innovate? What do they do with their product? Are they going to eventually allow like dealers to deal with their products? Like, that's something Paul C. Buff never wanted, was to deal with like B&H's and Adoramas, and that you have to buy directly from him so that he doesn't have to share the profits, which makes sense when you have that kind of footprint. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch them over the next couple of years and see what happens. I had never met Paul C. Buff. I really would have liked to have. Anyway.
I haven't either.
Well, now we don't get a chance to, unfortunately. So, thank you, Paul C. Buff, for everything you did. We're sorry to see you go. All right. That's all the news I wanted to talk about. The rest of this is going to be me and Mike talking about various things. And this first one, I think Mike is going to have a lot of fun with, which is, you hear a lot of stuff about how awesome it is to be this independent photographer. You're running your own business. You're the man. No one else can tell you what to do. But Mike, what are the worst things, the absolute worst things about being a professional photographer?
How about having no life outside of photography whatsoever, for one?
I think some people would argue, I mean, if they haven't been a pro photographer yet, they would argue that sounds amazing. Like, they get to be a photographer all the time.
Yeah, except, like, I used to have friends. I used to have hobbies. I used to go out and do things and run and play tennis and surf and, you know, do all this fun stuff. That has completely stopped as my business has grown.
Oh, that's, I think, depressing.
You have to be completely obsessed with it in order to make a living at it. And with that obsession comes, you know, you don't have any time. Like, you know, you can't hang up your coat at 5 o'clock and be done with the day. There's always stuff to be done. So it's like, I don't know, do I go out with friends, or do I have to send all these invoices that have been piling up for months now? You know, it's just like, I don't know. And then it's really hard, like, when you don't have a circle of friends from work or something, you don't see people on a regular basis. You don't create friendships. A lot of my friends now, rather, are people that I see when I travel. Like, I'll go to Seattle and I'll see a bunch of my friends randomly. And then I'll go to like I was just in Dubai and saw a bunch of people that I see over here in the States all the time. And I'll see them like 2 or 3 times a year, and that'll be it. I see my friends, my photo friends in other cities, like you, for example, more often than I see my friends in this city. So that really kind of sucks. And well, I mean, that's like the most sucky thing, I think. Like, you don't really have time to do all the stuff that you used to do. Like, when you got off the clock at 5 o'clock and you were done and you didn't have to think about work anymore, you could watch TV or watch a movie. Mm-hmm. But I'm constantly thinking about how I can make my business better, or how I can shoot something, or how I can get more business, or whatever it may be. So it's like the work never, ever ends.
So on that same note, I went to Gonzaga University, and I am a humongous college basketball fan. And today at 4:15, Gonzaga is playing UCLA. I'm not going to be able to watch that because a client has...
true problem right there.
So it's not like I can't watch that. I have a shoot today, a shoot that starts at 3:30 and ends 6:30 to 7, which means I don't even get to watch the pregame. And the post game won't be on anymore because the next game is going to be on. So I'm going to 100% miss this game. And that's something that I didn't have to worry about when I had a day job. Like, I probably would have just left work an hour early, or gotten in, you know, an hour early so I could leave early and go to a bar and watch the game. I don't have that option.
TiVo that thing?
I could, but...
But you're going to flip your phone on and, like, yeah, it's going to pop up or something.
And yeah, I'm going to get blitzed with such and such has happened. This is the score. This is the points from the main players. Like, it's just not... I don't do that. I can't do it. I can't be that guy who comes home and watches the game and pretends like it didn't happen yet. I know some people do that with, like, baseball especially. They'll, like, pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I can't do it. So I agree. It's like there's certain parts of this that do suck. Like, that's true. I don't have – goodness, it is kind of depressing when you think about it. I don't really have the friends that I used to anymore. I don't see them anymore.
Well, yeah, you were done at 5 and you could go do whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
Now you're done when you go to bed, and then you start when you wake up.
So do you know what I actually really hate, though, Mike? I hate Velcro. I cannot stand Velcro. I think Velcro is beyond the worst thing about being,
like,
a photographer.
Is that one of those irrational things,
yes,
that people hate? Like, a lot of people hate the word moist, you know? Is it like the texture that you hate, or the word that you hate? Or...
I just hate that it's everywhere. It's unavoidable. It's inescapable. It's in every aspect of everything that anyone does for storage here and as a photographer. Like, it is everywhere. There's not a better solution than Velcro. It's like we're falling back on Velcro and deciding we don't need to innovate that anymore.
How about the magnets? Like, the guys, they did the MagMod.
I've heard those are really heavy. So maybe some people are trying to make something better.
How heavy can they possibly be?
I don't know.
It's on a speed light. It's going to be like, what, half a pound at the most?
I've never used them. You're going after me now. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, for me, it's in bags. I can't stand Velcro in bags. And there was that dude who invented that slip-in thing that had, like, the there are holes along the top and, like, little wires that went into the little slots that allowed you to divide without Velcro. But if you ever want to rearrange a bag, you are guaranteed to never get it back to the way it was when the factory shipped it to you. You cannot do it. And no matter how often you try or how difficult or how much time you spend on it, it is too difficult to get the bag back in its original form. So what I generally do is, rather than reform a bag, if I can't fit in what I'm trying to fit, I buy a new bag so that I don't have to worry about Velcro ever. This is irrational, you're right.
What I do is I have so many of those Velcro dividers now that I just... So, like, you have the bag, right? This big oval-shaped bag, and then within it are all the dividers. And I just undo the edges around the edge of the bag and then take out the whole divider set in one go. So I've got like 15 Velcro dividers together. And I just place it on the carpet or in the closet and take in a whole new set of dividers and plop it right in. So I keep certain configurations depending on what I need it for. Like, I have like an architectural divider configuration, right? And then I have like a long zoom, which is a 7200 and a 100-400 divider configuration that I plop in. But I just take out the whole cube on the inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that actually makes a ton of sense.
But the things are stupid expensive, so.
I actually have there's a piece of luggage in my closet that is full of only dividers.
Yeah,
Velcro.
Me too. I have a giant moving box full of them. So.
And the thing is, I feel like I should throw them out, but every time I get to that point, my hands start shaking. Like, what if I need these?
Well, you know what I did do not so long ago is photographers are kind of hoarders, I think. And they all like to keep the boxes that lenses and cameras come in.
Oh my God, yes.
I threw out 5 years worth of boxes of lenses, of cameras, of pocket wizards, of accessories. And it was glorious.
That had to have been cathartic.
It filled the back of my car with boxes. And I don't know why people hang on to those stupid things.
Well, so let me. Oh, there is one example.
Resale. But like, $5, $10 to sit and look at this giant box in the corner of your room for 5 years to save $10 on resale? Give me a break. Just get rid of the boxes. I hate it. They're overpackaged. They're clumsy. There's stupid manuals that nobody reads in there. Just wrap the lens in the leather bag and send it. That's all you need. I don't need this crazy huge box.
I completely understand that. I know that I was walking through Karen Minder's garage 2 weeks ago, and there are a lot of boxes in there. So.
And why? Again, like
he sells them. He uses them for resale. But like you said, $10. What's $10 here? Like, is that actually lowering the price of the product?
I live in an apartment complex where everyone has garages, and I drive past people's garages, and there aren't cars in the garages, just boxes. I'm like, throw them out, people. Throw them out. Cameron, throw the stupid boxes out. Add up all the, like, think, okay, so you save $100 in resale over the course of 5 years by saving boxes, or you get the peace of mind insanity that comes with getting rid of all that crap and just cleaning out your life and getting rid of, and like the breaking point for me was like I'd moved 3 or 4 different times over the course of the last 5 years, and I realized I'd been schlepping these boxes with me to move and like paying a mover to pick up and move lens boxes. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I got rid of them all. It was great. And people still hoard the things. Like,
oh, yeah,
like
they will.
Old.
And they won't listen to you, by the way. They'll keep hoarding these boxes.
I know. They're awful. People, you're all hoarders.
I also think the worst part about being a photographer is taxes. I hate taxes.
I don't mind taxes. If it was easier to pay taxes, like there was, you know, what's your gross income? And you could say a number, say like 80 grand, right? And then you say, okay, you owe 20% of that. I'd be like, done. Take my money. But no.
It's complicated.
It's this enormous song and dance that makes no sense to anyone. You have to hire someone and pay them thousands of dollars a year to manage all this because it doesn't make any sense to anyone. All kinds of fees and late fees and quarterly. I'm like, if I could just cut one check, I would happily do it for a certain percentage and not have to think about it. But no, we have to do the whole receipt song and dance. We have to do the whole bank account, you know, hoopla. It's just insane. So it's very annoying, and it just dominates my life for 3 months out of the year.
I think people who have day jobs, they don't understand what we're going through because like you can TurboTax your day job. You have like one W-9 or whatever it's called, and you just do that, and then you're done, and then suddenly you have money. Like that is something that is a long-forgotten memory for me.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not the actual – well, there'd be a whole podcast about the usefulness of paying tax. But that's neither here nor there, but it's the process of paying tax that's the most annoying.
Okay, so I guess I can go back and rephrase that. It's not taxes that I'm annoyed with, it's
and
the
counting
process.
Up every mileage that I've driven and how many, God.
Yeah. I did that yesterday. It was really,
and then they
really
dangle
awful.
The whole audit thing over your head, like, be a good boy, you're going to get audited. So it's like, I feel like I'm a puppet here. It's just really annoying.
All right. You had at least one more thing you wanted to cover here.
Like photographers who bemoan the photography industry. And they're like, the industry is dead. And I can't make any money anymore because I'm being undercut. And all these new internet kids are coming up and stealing the business from me. And I used to be a commercial photographer in the 80s and I could develop film with a hand tied behind my back and this and that. I think there's never been a better time to be a photographer, personally, than right now.
Explain that.
Think of how much more we rely on imagery today than we did 10 years, even 5 years ago, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. look at every business needs a website. They need pictures. They need Instagram. They need social media. These are all very image heavy things. And not everyone's going to pay for that, but there are a lot more people who will pay for photography now than there were 10 years ago, than there were 20 years ago. So there's more photographers, but there's also more opportunities. And I mean, whether it's video, photography, I feel like I said, now more than ever, there is more of a need for photography and advertising. And that's why, well, I would also say that I don't know what it's like in the business to consumer market, but business to business, right? If you're an architectural photographer, if you're a fashion photographer, if you're a some other photographer that sells to businesses, not consumers, there's never been a better time. I would not want to be a a family photographer right now because you've been superseded by the iPhone.
Yeah, I think what the argument basically is it's very hard to make money if you're mediocre or if you're in the wrong market. That would be a fair assessment because being mediocre is really easy. Everyone is mediocre. The bar is so low at that point. And then there's this huge gap, and then there's people who are killing it, doing amazing stuff. And those are the people that are probably undercutting the mediocre guys, like the new kids on the block who happen to be actually excellent at what they do. So they took a picture of, let's go with an example here. They took a picture of, in San Francisco, the Bay Bridge that is so good, Budweiser wants it, and they buy it for a bunch of ads they slap on a bunch of buildings all throughout town. That I can easily see happening and undercutting, quote unquote, someone who's been doing it since 1982 because that person isn't producing that kind of imagery anymore. So I could see them getting jaded and upset about that.
And yeah, but I mean, what I think it comes down to is like advertising now is more image dependent than ever before. And there's way more opportunities than, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, even more so now.
I can tell you what, as a video guy, there's so much work in Kickstarter videos. Everybody needs that video for that Kickstarter campaign. And you know what? I still charge them exactly the same thing I charge anybody else.
And then there's intellectual property theft. You were mentioning some Bay Bridge thing, weren't you?
Yeah.
And Budweiser. What was the whole story there?
That actually is a direct reference to a friend of mine. He was driving around town, and he glimpsed out of the corner of his eye this ad for Budweiser. And there's this picture of the Bay Bridge. He's like, that looks like my picture. And he kept driving. And he kept doing this over the course of a few months. And eventually, I'm sitting with him in the car. He's like, you know what? There it is. There's no one on the street. I'm just going to stop. Will you run out and take a picture of that on your phone? And we'll go back and see if that's what it is. So I jump out of the car, take a picture. We go back. We take a look at the picture on the phone, and we bring up his actual photo. And there are things that are happening in the photo that are incredibly unique. There's a light that appears at the top of the Transamerica building that is only on a couple times a year. The way that the angle was of the shot, which is nearly impossible to recreate if you, I mean, you would know this, Mike. Let's say I move your tripod during an architecture shoot. You're screwed. You have to reshoot the whole thing because the angle is slightly off. So we looked and they lined up perfectly. We actually brought the photo into his computer and did it. So someone decided that they were going to just take his photo and just use it in this campaign. And it was probably the agency, not Budweiser itself, that just decided, we like this photo on Google. We're just going to yank that and toss it onto a few drugstores in the city and no one's going to notice. And he almost didn't notice. But that happens a lot. Like people who take good landscape photos, their stuff gets stolen constantly. And I think you can speak to that too. Like some of the photos you've taken, those things get ripped all the time.
I just had one guy take a bunch of photos off my website, flip them backwards, and then put them on his website.
Oh, yeah, that's real different.
Obviously to evade Google's image searches.
Did it work?
No, it didn't. Because I have moles everywhere who recognize my work. And people will email me and say, hey, this guy's... It happens like once a month. I guess someone who has stolen my work and someone emails me and says, hey, this guy's stealing your work. But not only with my work, but with my copywriting and taglines and website information. And people will literally copy and paste all of the about information on my website and just change their name. And I'm like, you're such a clown. Why would you do that? You're never, like, if you even think about doing that, you're never going to be successful.
What do you do in that situation, Mike?
I mean, I could register my copy with the copyright office, or I could trademark my slogan or whatever. Most of my photography is registered with the copyright office, and I do have a lawyer who will take care of that. Especially like the viral photos; those are fun to go after. But when it's like an individual person like that, it's always weird because it's like, do you send them an email? Do you actually try to get money out of them? Probably, they don't have any money, you know.
Clearly, otherwise, they wouldn't be stealing photos.
They wouldn't be stealing my photos and ripping off my text. And their websites are always horrendous. It's either a copy of my website or a horrendous like GeoCities template.
GeoCities, wow, that's a throwback to 1993.
Angel Fire. And so it's like, you know, sometimes you send him an email, sometimes you just let it go because it's annoying. Or some, like in Lee Morris's case, you write a post about it and put it on the front page of F-Stoppers.
I remember that.
But I mean, there's surprisingly little you can do about people, like individuals who steal. It's when companies steal that it's good. And like, I still have, you know, like my Wake Turbulence LAX photo, I still get settlements from that, like on a monthly basis from almost exactly a year ago. So it just depends on who's stealing it and what they're doing with it.
So the final thing that sucks about being a photographer, this is very related to the boxes, I would think. Are these USB cables that you?
Oh yes.
That anger you?
They're on my desk right now. Look, I'm just surrounded by USB cables.
I have a desk drawer full of them.
Here's
the thing
more.
Is, I think what's most annoying about USB cables and Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt is a little easier because at least there's only one connector for everything. With USB, there's, I can think of four, maybe five. There's micro.
Well, now there's five because Apple just came out with the new thing, right?
Did they? Oh, yeah, wait a minute. I know what you're talking about. It's that one port for everything, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's irritating because if it's different than... It's Thunderbolt, though, isn't it? I thought it was Thunderbolt. Is it not?
It's not like the actual Thunderbolt. Is it Thunderbolt? It has like USB-C, right?
I don't know.
That's what they call it?
I didn't look
into it. USB-C 5 or something?
If it's a USB something, that's frustrating because we got micro, we have mini, we have USB. We have the larger USB butt that's... So if you look at my microphone right now, it has like regular USB 3 that goes into the computer, but it's got this larger, chunkier one that actually goes into the mic. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's regularly.
It's like a square, right?
Yeah, I'm talking... And that one you're holding, the other end of that, that's another form.
USB 3.
That's another form of USB. That's a mixture of like USB, micro USB, and something else. This is ridiculously frustrating.
Like giant chunk.
Yeah, and printers. Printers have this thing too. It's never just a simple USB. Why do you need this much?
Or how about... I don't understand why... well, I do, but... Like cameras and memory cards and card readers and my flash triggers come with a USB cable. I'm like, guys, I have a million of these things. Stop sending them. Like, it's overpackaged. It's bad for the environment. It's just going to get thrown out. It's a waste of your money.
The thing is, though, you it's not getting thrown out. I know you're keeping them.
That's well, okay, fair enough. I do go through when I try to throw them out, but they just come back. It's like a weed. They're weeds. That's what they are.
So to take away from this, the worst things about being a photographer are minor inconveniences such as boxes, taxes, and
I think the
USBs.
French thing is kind of major inconvenience.
That one's a major. Okay, that's true. But these other things that we've been complaining about for the last 20 minutes are all minor, but they all build on each other, I feel like, and you're surrounded by clutter, and clutter is, it kills me.
We could talk about the great things if you wanted to even this out.
Okay, give me two great things about being a photographer.
Well, first of all, it's 9:30 in the morning, and I just rolled out of bed to do this, and I didn't have to be anywhere, and I'm wearing a t-shirt and shorts.
I'm also doing that.
I don't have to listen to anyone. If I don't want to work, I don't have to work. I mean, you should work to make money, but if I'm like not feeling it that day, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to do it. Or if I say I want to go on vacation, like I don't have to kiss anyone's butt to get the time off. I just decide in February I don't want to work, so I'm going to take a week off and go on vacation. I traveled to some awesome places, which is really cool, like constantly.
Yeah, you haven't been home in what feels like forever. I haven't seen you since you were up here a couple months ago.
I've already flown like 35,000 miles this year, just pretty mental.
And it's what, April? It's like not even April yet.
Yeah. So that's really, it's, I mean, like the travel's awesome. The not having to listen to anyone is awesome. But there are a lot of inconveniences that come along. inconveniences.
Minor inconveniences. So what you're saying is it's all worth it, Mike, right?
Yes, definitely.
It's all worth it.
I don't know what else I would do. Like, honestly, like I wouldn't go switch careers and like be, I studied environmental science. I'm not going to go like decide I want to design wind turbines anymore because that's not as awesome as being a photographer. So.
Yeah. So there you go. There's a lot of inconveniences that suck, but it's all worth it.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Next segment I want to do is a short one called the Not So Obvious Questions. And I'm going to ask you them, Mike, and I want you to answer to the best of your ability. And I have three questions here. Are you ready?
Okay. You have not prepared me for this, so.
No, I haven't. Ah. I did this to Karaminder last week where I said it was the B1, B2 test. Which one should you use?
All right.
So here. All right. You are given a camera. You can only do one of these things with it, composition or perfect exposure. Which one is more important?
Composition by far.
Why?
I can fix the exposure in post.
That's true. Let's say you're shooting, you can only shoot in JPEG medium.
Yeah, I still do composition. Well, I mean, how far off is the exposure? Like 2 stops, 3 stops? Or like
let's say that your light meter in the camera itself is malfunctioning by 2 or 3 stops and it thinks it's in focus and you have to shoot in program mode.
Yeah, I still think that you can get away with like some awesome pieces of photography. And you can really play with mood and lighting with exposure as well. Like the proper exposure is generally always the wrong exposure. Anyway, in my opinion, because you can't really, it's like boring. It's like it is what it is. So no, I think that would be fun. I'd love to do like, I don't know if there's a way to program a camera to like erratically expose.
Like without just tell it to just like decide on its own to just go crazy with it. Yeah. Okay.
And I mean, and you could always like, it depends what direction you're facing. Like you could turn into the sun and change, you know, the exposure.
So what you're saying is you're going to cheat it. You're going to find a way to cheat it.
I'm a cheater. but no, that's a cool one. But I definitely say composition every time.
I
agree.
Composition
is everything. Like lighting doesn't, I mean, lighting is important. But first and foremost is composition. So especially in architecture, what I do. So
you could have a perfectly lit scene and it could be terrible because your composition was bad. So,
oh, totally. Like flat and awful. And well, you can't do good lighting without good composition, I think. So there's that too.
Oh, man. Turned it around on me. All right. Next one. Mike, why do I need a gray card or color checker?
I don't think you do.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
You don't need one. It's highly recommended, but you don't need one.
Why is it highly recommended then?
I like to use it as a base. Like I will set my color and then I'll mess with it from there. I think a lot of mood can be changed. A lot of feel, mood, and tension, and you can change the story of a photo by changing the color on it. But I think you should at least know where you're starting from, so you have like a clean slate to start with. But I mess with the colors in all my pictures. But I want to know where I started and how I got there rather than just throwing spaghetti at a wall.
That's a good phrase.
Yeah, I'd say you don't need one. I didn't use one for years and I made plenty of money.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm about to catch you in this because only in the last 6 months have I noticed you actually pulling out that color checker.
But I think it's a helpful tool, but not the end all be all. And I it's just one more tool in the bag. Like I could totally work without it, but it just helps my work a little bit more at this point to have it.
All right, final question.
And for $50, why not, right? It's like whatever.
Are they really $50 for one of those? Jesus.
Yeah, Christ. Well I think the passport, the little mini version that like clicks open and that's more expensive, but the big classic one is cheaper.
That is so counterintuitive to me that the smaller one is more expensive.
Well, it's got like, it's like a clapperboard. It opens and like, it flips over. I don't know. It's weird.
So fancy. God, everything in this industry is overpriced. That should be another thing on our reasons to the worst things of being a photographer is everything is overpriced.
That's true.
All right. Final question.
Yes.
When you expose your photos and you see the little light meter on the inside of the diopter, do you
like
trust
the meter or the,
yeah, the little, that's a meter. It's in there telling you, that little thing, the little dot. Do you trust it when it says everything is perfect? It says it's perfectly in line, exposure is perfect.
Well, I don't use that. I just look at the back of the screen and I dial it in. I never.
So the reason I ask this is because when I was shooting Canon, and when I still shoot Canon, I generally underexpose according to the light meter by half a stop because I think it looks better when I've underexposed by half a stop.
I generally overexpose.
Really?
Yeah. But I mean, I don't shoot what you shoot.
No. Well, I mean, so let me ask you this then. So you have found that it's easier to add the exposure the other direction than it is to come up.
Well, I just feel like for architecture, at least, brighter is generally better unless you're really going for like a super moody photo. So
that's fair. Now that
no one has a problem with a bright interior space, right?
No.
Like no one thinks like, oh, I don't want to live there. It's too bright. But you do think like, oh, that's dark and depressing. Well, I mean, it does work in some cases. Like there are some really cool spaces that are nice and dark.
I think that this argument has actually also become less and less relevant over the years as RAW has become so powerful. Like if I didn't like the exposure, I have in almost every camera on the market, the ability to push the dynamic range by one or two stops in either direction, even if it's the worst camera on the market. So underexposing by half a stop makes me feel better when I'm looking at the back of the screen. But when I get home, I don't know. I change it depending on what I'm shooting. But I just was curious if you actually even pay attention to that thing anymore.
I just use the cam ranger mostly for like, so I'll just like put the camera on a tripod and take a picture and I'll just see what it looks like and go from there up or down accordingly. So
yeah. Okay. That's actually a strategy that's well used now in the digital age. Back in film, that was not a thing, but you know what? No one shoots in film anymore except for the amazing wedding photographer, Lauren Jonas, who makes some outstanding medium format film stuff. But other than that,
very cool stuff.
All right, so the last thing I want to talk about today, thank you for putting up with my not-so-obvious questions, Mike.
You're welcome.
The last thing I want to talk about today is, this was actually suggested by Karaminder, and I'm going to read you a segment, and I want to get your input on this. And
it sounds like a high school English class.
It's a little bit like that. So this is from the blog of Jason Ortel, and the blog is called, Who Are We Making Photos For Anyway? Recently, I've caught myself approaching photography a little bit backwards. First and foremost, I would always make photos for my clients on paid jobs, so that will never change. For everything else, I seem to try and make photos that would garner the approval of my peers in the photography world and ultimately get noticed by the masters of the photography world. And yes, a lot of my photos have gotten that approval. I need to make photos for the non-photographers. That's why I got into photography in the first place. So what do you think of that assessment?
I think people who make photos for photographers are dumb.
So on that note, your most famous images, the ones that have gotten the absolute most viral traction, were not made for other photographers.
Oh, definitely not.
Like that most recent one.
I mean, well, first of all, for me.
Yeah. You wanted to make this photo of all these airplanes taking off from an airport. You wanted to make this day-to-night photo of the airport. You wanted to go up in a helicopter and take pictures of all these ships stuck at sea because of the strikes. That was
right.
You.
So it's not, you know, you're going to get me started down this long, long road here. There are a lot of photographers who make photos for other photographers. So they get a lot of likes on Flickr, likes on Facebook, retweets on Twitter.
500 pixels.
Likes on Instagram. But if 1,000 photographers like your photo, would you rather have that or would you have the one person who likes your photo enough to pay you $1,000 for it? You know,
obviously you want you're trying to do this.
Well, I mean, in some it's I guess it's okay. Like if you're not in photography, say you're retired or it's a hobby and you want approval from photographers, that's cool. But I see a lot of people our age who spend all this time making photos for other photographers to like ooh and ah over, but they don't, you know, really have anyone outside. Like they make technically interesting photos for photographers to go ooh, but you know that's not what the people want who are going to pay the bills. So
yeah,
I guess it depends who you want to make photos for. But
so what you're saying is you kind of agree with where Jason is coming from. Is over the last few years he's actually decided, wait a minute, I need to make photos for the people that actually the majority of humanity, which is non-photographers.
Well, yeah, I mean, but again, it depends on your outlook. Like if you just want attention, and make photos for photographers. If you want money, make photos for potential clients. If you want to feel good about yourself, make photos for whatever it may be.
You know, there's a lot of argument to be made that if you feel love for something and you're really engrossed by the subject matter, you're shooting it for yourself, but then that product becomes a lot more viable to others. So my example on this are your three photos that I just mentioned. And when I shot that the video of the Thunderbirds, I was allowed to shoot that how I wanted to shoot it and tell the story that I wanted to tell. And I got to put my whole heart into it. And I did that one for mostly for me. I was like, I want to prove that I can do this. And in all four of these cases that I've just mentioned, everything went viral because everyone could relate to it. So I feel like if you shoot for yourself, if you're not shooting for a client, anything else that you do, shoot to make yourself happy. Don't shoot to make someone else give you a little like nod of approval or 550 Instagram likes. Like that's not what I live for.
Completely agreed. It hurts. I don't know. I die a little inside when I see a photographer. There's nothing wrong with it, but like they're trying to like, they want to be up and coming and they want to be well known. And you look at their client list and it's like that long, but you look at their social media and it's like, I can't even fit it in the frame. They have like 30,000 likes on every photo. And I'm like, yeah, but who are you making the photos for? You know? So, yeah. But if they make them for themselves, cool. And photographers happen to like it, cool, but you got to be honest with yourself. Again, there's no problem if you're honest with yourself about who you're making photos for.
And I don't like the mentality also of like, how do I get sponsored? That one. You should never approach the subject of photography from that standpoint of how do I get sponsored? What do I have to do to get someone to give me their money, to give me their products and put my name on their next to their brand? I personally have something, I guess, morally against that because as a photographer, as an artist, I'm creating things because I'm an artist. I'm not creating things to commercialize myself and my name.
Yeah, I had a couple larger companies who shall remain nameless approach me looking to do some kind of sponsorship deal. And I kind of shied away from it because I knew that they were going to want to get their hands on whatever I was doing.
Yeah.
And kind of make me say, hey, you have to mention our lights or our store or our product in your videos and in your this and that. And I'm like, I can't do that.
You can feel their hands going into your back and turning you into a puppet.
Yeah.
I don't mind expounding on something that I truly do think is amazing, but you do walk that road where if you get fully involved with that company, they're not going to be able to make something truly amazing all the time. Eventually, they're going to come out with a product that they want you to endorse that you don't actually believe in. And it's at that point that I feel
I mean, how much are we getting paid? That's the thing. Like,
yeah, but that's also the thing. Where do you sacrifice your personal beliefs and your morals for money?
I don't know.
There's a line for everyone.
I'm in it for me more than, you know, anything else. Like right now, I'm not starving anymore. I don't need, you know, to kiss a ton of butt to get to where I'm going. So I'm like, it has to be a very compelling thing.
I feel like I'm where you were 2.5 years ago.
Right, it's a good place to be.
No, it's not. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. Like, where's the next gig coming from? When am I going to make my next break? So, like, I'm trying to do the Mike Kelly method, which is to continue just pushing through, even though every night I stare at the ceiling lamenting my own existence. I will eventually push through this. And yeah, anyway, that's a side note. But I don't want the money of a sponsor because I don't feel like I can continue to do what I love doing if I have someone else always looking over my shoulder and telling me what I can and can't say. Like, I like being able to say...
But pay the bills.
Right. I mean, I like being able to say, I love the Nikon D750. I also happen to love the Panasonic Lumix GH4. In very few situations would that love and being able to say that if I was sponsored by anyone be allowed. Let's say I'm sponsored by Canon. I definitely couldn't say that by either of those. I'd have to say that I love the 5DS, which I probably will. But the thing is, I just don't want to be restricted to only being able to say what I love about one or two different things. Like, I love this Fuji camera. Now I can't talk about Panasonic. Like, it's everyone makes something great. I think we should all be focused on not focusing on all these gear. Like, how much gear do I need to buy to be successful? But more, what can I use right now that is within my range to make something beautiful? We were talking about this actually yesterday, about how the idea of if I only bought this and if I only bought that and if I only bought this one more thing, I could create that photo that I really love and I could be that photographer on that stage. That is a mentality that is crushing this industry. And I, people need to
break
out of
it. No, it's okay because it keeps us employed.
It does. It keeps a lot of people employed. A lot of people employed. And I don't know if I'm okay with that. I don't know. I haven't decided. So, at any rate. Mike, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome.
You've been an excellent Caraminder substitute.
Thank you. I'm glad. I'm glad I can provide entertainment.
So, thanks for joining us, guys. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at Twitter at Rewrap Podcast and always at resourcemagonline.com. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe. Send us some love on Twitter and tell your friends to give us a listen. We really want to get out there to as many people as possible, and we can't do that without your help. My Twitter handle is at Jaren Schneider. I know that Mike actually doesn't really use Twitter, so I mean, we could say your Twitter handle.
I monitor a bit. I kind of enjoy it, okay. But I'm not like a Twitter-holic like you.
What's your Twitter handle?
It's at mpkelly.com. Put on the screen there so you can...
Yes, and you're also on Facebook. Your Facebook page is pretty sweet. I like to follow you because you get a little behind the scenes of what you're doing when you're out on shoots and some of your witty insight.
And that's facebook.com/MichaelKellyPhotography.
So make sure you follow that as well. So, all right.
Thank you, Jaren.
Thank you, Mike. This has been Podcast Rewrap. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.